does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And a lot of interesting things are going on in technology always. Hackers have been at it with, they've been infecting hand scanners with malware. It's kind of an interesting story, and they've actually been getting into the hardware itself. And of course, this is the week of the supermoon, too.
Oh,
heard about the supermoon?
I have. Okay.
Yeah, so the supermoon is big this week.
I thought it was last week.
Last weekend was actually the peak of it.
Oh, okay.
And the next one's going to be in August. We have three supermoons in a row.
Okay.
So we'll talk about how that
happened.
I didn't
want to contradict the host. That's why
It was actually June 12th. The actual supermoon was full moon. But then the next one's going to be August.
I'm sure you will explain this in great detail.
We'll explain the supermoon, yeah. The Chrome browser has, that people have been talking about, a flaw in it, and it drains the batteries of your PC, Windows PC.
I'm kidding.
It's been there for 2 years, and I'll talk about that. And Google has finally decided to fix it after it's been around for 2 years. Somebody hacked into the Tesla Model S. They successfully hacked into it, and they started, you know, putting the windows up and down and honking the horn. You know, this is the problem when you get all electronics. Can you imagine you'd be driving around, somebody hacks your car and then all of a sudden puts on the brakes and starts taking...
Open the windows down and up and...
Yeah, and it's quite a big threat. I mean, as we get to this Internet of Things and everything on the Internet, this hacking of items that are on the network are going to become more and more significant as time goes on. And of course, this week we're going to feature another special person on Profiles in IT. We're going to feature Garrett M. Camp. He is co-founder of StumbleUpon and also co-founder of Uber.
Oh.
Do you use Uber?
I use Uber, yes.
Yeah, so we'll talk about Uber. I've used both of them, actually.
Uber
StumbleUpon and Uber.
Quite controversial.
But it's very, very convenient to use. And of course, it was a huge, huge mailbag.
Giant.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Yeah. Oh, it's big. I'm gonna have to start working out, you know, for this show because Mr. Big Voice just won't help me lift up the mail.
No, he won't.
It's union.
Yeah.
We got an email from Ann in Bethesda. Dear Doc Schertz, I'd be grateful if you devote a program to internet privacy and security. I don't have to devote a whole program to that. I can talk about it. Your level of awareness on the topic may be more significant than mine. I've been doing some YouTube searches, and I've come across plenty of stuff that's concerning. I think there's a whole new way to use my home computer on the net. I have an iMac. I've got several Gmail accounts, had a Google Voice, which I canceled. I'm looking around, and there's a lot of stuff going on. I don't want people viewing my activities. What do you suggest in terms of privacy? Well, Anne, privacy is the name of the game now because we are losing it as we go forward. I mean, there are a lot of simple things. For instance, there are face recognition software programs that can scan all the pictures on Facebook. And so they could identify you. For instance, if you were identified in one picture, and then they could then find every picture that you're in and put them all together with that face recognition software. And that's actually being used quite often. Google, of course, loves to track you.
Mm-hmm.
So what they like to do is they like you to, if you use the Chrome browser, they say you need to log in with your Gmail account. Well, of course, that means that you've identified yourself, so every place that you browse, everything you do, every YouTube video you watch, everything you do, they know you as a person and that did it. And they use that to target you. So that's actually a problem. And, of course, when you go around the web, the different websites put cookies on your browser. And those cookies are used to direct ads that come to you. So once you get cookies on your browser, the ads will ads that are targeted specifically to you can be based on what sites you have viewed. Your viewing habits with Netflix are in the history. Your viewing habits with YouTube are in the history. And so there's lots of Amazon knows what you've ordered. You order stuff, Amazon knows exactly what you've done. And if you've got any kind of Nest devices, these are these internet-connected devices, either for CO2 sensors or for thermostats or for webcams. If you have any Nest devices in your house, Nest knows when you're awake, when you're on vacation, what your whole habits are in your house. So there are a lot of things that people know on the internet about you because of how you interact with them on the internet. So here's some things that you might do. First of all, don't log in to your Chrome browser. Don't if you use YouTube, don't log into it. You don't necessarily want them to know every YouTube video that you look at. You can also block cookies, and in particular, you can block, you can make it so a cookie can't be read by a third party. This is in the you can set the privacy tab on your browser so that you can limit the use of cookies. Now, some websites need cookies to be functional because they track you. So if you've got a particular website that you like that you use and you trust, you could enable cookies for that particular website and then just don't use them for other websites. The other thing that you could do, of course, everything you do is traceable back to your IP address. So if you post a comment or you post post anything to the blog, no matter what you put down as your username when you're posting it, it can still go right back to your IP address. So if anybody wanted to track you down, they could go into the logs, they could see that IP address, they could figure out exactly where you were by going back to your IP address. So one way that you could do to keep your IP address anonymous is to use a proxy server. So now, like I use VPN Express. Now, I use it whenever I log into Wi-Fi hotspots so people can't snoop on what I'm doing. So I've got VPN Express on my iPhone. I've got it on my iPad. I've got it on my laptop. So whenever I'm using an unsecured or open Wi-Fi hotspot, I always activate the VPN Express. Or if I want to watch a Netflix movie in India, I activate the VPN Express so Netflix thinks I'm in the U.S. watching the movie. Mm-hmm. So that actually is quite good because then when you do all your activities, the IP address they see is the IP address of the proxy server. Because you see, it's called a proxy server because you send the request to that server and it actually makes the web request on your behalf. It's like a proxy request on your behalf. And so the website that's being contacted actually only sees the IP address of the proxy server. There are some proxy server systems that are designed to really be super anonymous, so they'll even hide your identity even further. So the key is, the other thing that you probably don't want to do if you want to protect your privacy, if you go on to any blogs, any place where you have to put in your email address and it's publicly seen, don't use the email address that you use for everything else. Create some throwaway email addresses. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because what happens is once you post something on the web, it's going to be there forever. Because all the search engines pick it up. And if it's tied back to your email address that everybody knows who you are, they might do a search for your email address, then everything comes up. But if you do some throwaway email addresses, it's not going to be tied back to you.
Right.
So you can actually protect your privacy with fairly simple techniques, and you'll be okay. Now, Google, of course, and any of the search engines, the kind of things you search for are pretty indicative of your situation. So if somebody's sick, they'll search for certain kind of medicines. If you want to travel, you'll search for certain sort of things, certain types of travel locations. If you're looking for new shoes, you'll search for shoes. So Google actually stores all the search terms that you use. And even though they may not know your specific name, many times people like put in their own name just to see what comes up. So you can look at somebody's searches and you can figure out who they are pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a lot of research on that. So if you really want to be secure, then be very careful on where you do your searches. But this is an ongoing issue.
You know, it's funny. I just did a little test over here. I opened up two browsers on Chrome.
Mm-hmm.
One logged into my email. The other I stayed logged out of
mm-hmm.
and went into Google Maps because I use that frequently.
Yeah.
And it came up, even though it's not logged in as me, it's not logged in as anyone,
mm-hmm.
it brought up the very last street that I ran through Google Maps yesterday.
Wow.
Isn't that strange?
Yeah. So it's somehow tracking.
Somehow. And then when I went back to the homepage where you choose mm-hmm. which service you want and mm-hmm. clicked email, it logged in as me.
So this privacy issue is becoming, because now there's so much data available,
mm-hmm.
it is, they have a huge data store on you, that privacy going forward is going to become really a huge issue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, and I don't know how to maintain your privacy completely unless you never get on the internet. Because
really,
because if you do anything productive on the internet, you're going to leave a trail.
Yeah.
So that was a good question. I don't know that I gave you a comforting answer. Oh, by the way, that VPN Express I talked about is $80 a year. I pay for that. We got an email from Wayne in Tucson. Hi, Jim and Doc. I've been listening to your show for over a year now and really enjoy the podcasts. I'd like to switch over to Voice over IP and have looked into Ooma and Basic Talk. Ooma's website lists the unit for $99 and Basic Talk's is free, but you have to pay them $9.99 a month. Ooma doesn't charge per month as far as I can see. Can you explain the differences between the two? Which is better? I plan to keep my local phone number for a couple more years. P.S. I've got a drone story. Over the 4th of July weekend, we went for a walk Sunday morning and found a drone upright near a bush.
What?
The name and phone number was written on the underside. That's a smart idea, actually.
I guess, yeah.
We contacted them, and they came over and said they were flying between storms, and the wind came up and carried the drone away. The wind was so strong, they lost control. It was approximately a quarter mile away. They're glad to get it back. I guess the drones can't return when there's a strong wind. Wayne H. Boyer in Tucson, Arizona. Well, Wayne, that's an interesting drone story. And I have flown my drone. I was down at Newport News once taking pictures of the campus. And a big storm came in, a storm front, and I was getting gusts of wind of about 20 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about the maximum that my drone can fly against. And I was going full bore against the wind at 20 miles an hour, and I was
right.
losing ground. So what I did, I went over to the drone. I stood underneath the drone. I just lowered it down, and I grabbed it. I didn't even let it go on the ground because if I tried to land it, the wind would just blow it.
Sure.
So, if you get – I think these small drones can't handle more than about 20 miles an hour, and then they're toast.
Well, I would suspect what happened was the wind blew it away from the guy and it disconnected from the GPS at that point. If he was a quarter mile away, so he lost contact and the thing just...
No, it would still have GPS, except that it wouldn't be able to return home because it couldn't fight the wind.
Oh, yeah.
So it would just sit there trying to fight the wind.
Probably ran out of battery or something.
And then what happens is that they land on their own. If
mm-hmm.
it turns out that the battery gets down to 5% left, it will just land on its own instead of dropping out of. So it just probably drifted a quarter of a mile and then landed on its own.
Are you sure you want to put your name and phone number on your drone?
Well, that's a two-edged sword. I mean, if you lose it, you want somebody to return it. On the other hand, if the police have it and they're looking for the culprit who launched this thing and they want to arrest them, having your name and address on it's not a good idea.
Problem.
So I've got a good idea.
But you're not doing anything nefarious, though.
I'm not doing anything nefarious. Just in the gray area, but I'm always
in the gray area.
But I'm very careful. Very, very
just to
careful.
The white side of gray.
I'm very, very careful. Now, Wayne, his main question though was on voice over IP.
Mm-hmm.
Now he talked about Basic Talk and Ooma. These are both voice over IP services, so you can get rid of your phone service, and then you can have people call you at home, and it's just like you've got a regular telephone service, except you're just using data instead of actually connected phone calls. And so voice over IP has become extremely, extremely good, and I think it's very smart to switch. Now, Basic Talk is basically a cheap version of Vonage.
Mm-hmm.
So Basic Talk is actually a voice over IP system. It's actually marketed by Vonage.
Oh, really?
So so Vonage charges $30 a month. But then Vonage says, you know, there are a lot of people that want to pay $30 a month. So we don't want to reduce our price to $10 a month because there are people that pay $30.
So they change the name.
So let's create Basic Talk. We'll market Basic Talk as another company, and we'll charge $10 a month.
It's like the same hotel offering different hotel names so they can give different prices, right?
Yeah, and so what they do, you pay $10 a month, and then you get free calling in the United States. They have a box that basically plugs into your phone system, and it converts it to IP, Internet Protocol, and then ships it out. Now, the other option, of course, is UMA. Which I actually have now. UMA is a box that's got a lot of really nice features on it, but it costs $99. Now UMA says that, but then once you pay the $99, you get free phone calling in the U.S. forever. Mm-hmm. You don't pay a monthly charge, and then if you want to do call internationally, you can preload your account. So you can make international calls at Skype rates. Like I can call China for 2.5 cents a minute. Wow. I can call India for 5 cents a minute. And so, I mean, it's a very good rate. Now, here's what they did, though. They charge you the taxes every month. So while the phone call is free, the telecom taxes they have to pay. So I looked up the telecom taxes for I live in Virginia. For Virginia, that would be $3.86 a month that I'd have to pay. And so I have UMA, and I'm paying, so you pay, depending on what state it varies. So you pay, let's say, approximately $4 a month, mm-hmm, for the taxes with UMA. With Straight Talk, with Basic Talk, you've got $10 a month. So after 20 months, you've spent $120 differential there.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to keep your voice over IP system more than a couple of years, UMA is the best deal.
Sure.
Now, UMA's got all kinds of features that I just love. They've got a blacklist. They've got a community blacklist where they've gone out and they figured out where all of these telecaller comes from, and they've blocked them all, and they people report them, and so that's dynamically updated. So I activated the blacklist, but some calls still make it through, like, mm-hmm, you know, like some politicians or something. So you can actually, if you want, then you can go and you can create your own personal blacklist on top of that. And that is really convenient. The
sure.
other thing I like about UMA is if somebody leaves a voicemail message at home, it converts it to an MP3 and sends me an email. So I get an email with a voicemail attachment for every message that's left on my home phone.
Wow.
Because part of the problem with the home phone is I'm really using only my cell phone now. I never check the messages
sure.
on the home phone.
Sure.
So it used to be people would, you know, only the people from the past. Call me on my landline. These are people that don't have my mobile number.
Right.
Or these would be, you know, relatives who are over 80 who mm-hmm. who really aren't into the whole mobile phone business and still use the old landline. Now what we did with UMA, I took my old landline when I canceled my Verizon phone account. I transferred the phone number to UMA. So now everybody's calling me on my same old phone number, and it didn't cost. Well, I had to pay $30 to transfer the number. Now it turns out Basic Talk will transfer the number free.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I still think UMA has a more robust feature set than Basic Talk, and so I'd recommend. And the other thing UMA's got that they've got there, you know, I plugged my UMA thing right into my home telephone system, and it worked perfectly. You can also with UMA. You can actually buy a whole phone system for UMA. So it actually works quite well. That was a great question.
It was.
And I'll tell you, we love all your emails.
We do indeed.
Yes, we do.
We do. And hang on. Whoa! Your music broke, David.
What happened? We have a visitor.
Your music broke. Hang on. We have to do this properly.
Roll the intro, please.
Yeah. Stand by, please. Stand by.
It's okay. Have an intro?
The potty dog.
Oh, there we go.
David
Burke.
Don't stop.
Work on something new for you. I'm sorry.
Please, I'm begging you. Now, listen, I'm just walking down the hall.
You don't like Kesha?
No, wait. Hold on one second.
I thought you had all of her CDs.
I'm walking down the hallway, heading to the men's room. And all of a sudden, I'm listening to the PA in the men's room, and I'm hearing the doc talk about Uma Thurman phone service.
No, it's not Uma
Thurman. What is that
all
about?
No, it's not.
Uma Thurman's got a phone deal?
Yeah. You would want that. It's only $99, too. Yeah,
$99.
Wow, $99. Why is it that the phone carriers, AT&T and the rest of these guys, will not tell you when everything gets lowered? You're still stuck in your old plan?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And then I find out from my sister that, you know, for $40... I can have the same plan that I'm spending $150
for. Right,
they're
exactly.
they're never going to tell you that. Well,
sweet
see, I canceled my home line a long time ago and got voice over IP. So I
yeah,
so
doc,
so
stop.
I pay four. So I kept my home my landline and I now I pay $4 a month.
You notice something with him, Jimbo?
I pay $4 a month.
Look at his hair. He's got the Beach Boys look now.
He does
What's
have
that.
It,
all
I
about?
Don't know. It's kind of.
You got the comb down.
It's jaunty.
Well, I just got back from Thailand.
Oh, that'll do it.
That's it.
Okay.
Right. Well, I'm not sure where that has
hang
to do.
There for a
I don't know where that one came from. Yeah.
Any mobile phone news?
Any mobile phone news?
Or whatever they want to call it now. We used to call it cell phones, but they don't do that anymore. It's mobile.
No, there's
no portable device.
Listen. You got a 5.
I got a 5.
He's had a 5. Where's he been?
The big news this week. The
Marianne
big news.
Won it.
Yeah. No. I actually paid for this. Because I had my 4. I was going to keep it, and I dropped it on the sidewalk in front of the studio and
smashed the
display.
I had to rain on your parade.
The big news this week is they hacked a Tesla.
Wow.
They hacked it, you know, because nobody's hacked it, and so Elon Musk was offering $10,000 to anybody who could hack a Tesla, right, and they did. Right. And so these guys hacked into the Tesla, were honking the horn, bringing the windows up and down.
This big news, they only have 5 of those, so I'm sure all 5 of those guys are upset.
So that's actually, this actually, you know, as we go more to this Internet of Things and people have got their thermostats on the Internet and you've got your toaster on the Internet.
You know, and the carriers are getting involved now. Comcast is offering, or whoever it is, offering that, the check your home, the security for an extra $12.
That's right.
Come on, really?
I mean, if your toaster's on the Internet, somebody's like, your toaster's going to start popping up and down, somebody's going to hack
into
your toaster.
I'm going to mess with this guy's toaster.
I got nothing else to do.
That's right. I'm going to make him
Doc,
toast. I'm going to toast him, yes.
Can we just backtrack for a second here?
Yeah.
I hate to have any dissension on your show.
Okay.
Because you are the king as far as knowledge.
Yes.
Technical stuff goes.
Yes.
But the voiceover IP, I'm sorry, the quality is just terrible.
The quality is great.
Okay, here, so we go.
Here we go.
Here we go.
All right. Gloves come on.
Really? Come on.
First of all, Dave, the telephone carriers in the trunk line are all using voice over IP.
Oh, is that the deal?
Yeah. As soon as they get on their trunk lines, they convert to voice over IP.
He's popping a vein. Look at that.
And all the fiber optic cable that goes under, it's all voice over IP at the backhaul.
Why are they doing that?
Because it's more efficient use of the bandwidth.
Oh.
It's a much more efficient use of the bandwidth. So voice over IP, it's a better utilization of the facility. So it's very high quality. Now, if you try to do voice over IP with a crappy internet connection, or let me use a more technical term.
Substandard.
Please do, Doc.
A slow internet connection, low bandwidth internet connection. Yeah.
Then it will sound bad.
That's right. So voice over IP needs a good bandwidth.
Right.
And so if you hear a bad voice over IP, it's because of a bandwidth issue.
Okay. Right.
So like people make Skype calls and they'll say, well, you know, it's not a good. It's because it's. You're calling somebody that's in a hotel and there's not a good bandwidth.
Okay. The only news I have for you, Doc, is I bought another mini iPad.
Wow.
It's my 4th one that I've given them all away until now.
Why do you keep giving them away?
I have relatives. You know that story. You know.
No.
Well, you don't.
I don't give people my iPad.
Here's an iPad for you, and here's one for you. No, I bought the Mini. I just love the Mini.
Isn't it great?
Everybody likes the Mini.
I like it better than the regular one.
The regular one is pretty heavy.
It's heavy, and I like the Mini. It's great. It's
look at this.
Look at you, buddy.
I'm looking at the show notes on the iPad.
Did you start off with a full-size iPad?
No, I never. No, I just love the Mini. I like the size.
Yeah,
size and the weight.
I mean, I don't do phones on it. I just do, you know, internet and email and that kind of
stuff. I do all my texting on this because this is too small.
You do video.
Oh, yeah, I do it all. You do the video phone with it.
That's nice.
I love it. The iPad Mini is wonderful. I tried finding another alternative, a different company, a different kind of a platform. Nobody's as good as the iPad Mini. I'm sorry.
No, iPad Mini is pretty good.
There's no doubt. It's funny. I heard some tech guy talking last week about, you know, the difference between the Samsung stuff and the i stuff. You're used to one thing, and then when you try to switch over to something else, it doesn't do what you want it to do the way you want to do it.
Apple still has this market.
They've got the advantage, but it's the whole ecosystem that they've got. They've got, you know, the iCloud that backs up your stuff, and you got iTunes, everything.
Let's talk about the cloud just for a second. The cloud's just another phone line over here, right?
The iCloud. Right. Okay, all it is
it's a nice marketing term. It's in the cloud.
Okay, this is in the cloud. This is what it actually means.
Right, here we go.
You put multiple computers, connect them to the internet, and then you've got a layer which is load balancing. Mm-hmm. So, like, if one computer starts getting too much traffic, it just moves the traffic to another computer.
Okay.
So you don't actually know which computer you're talking to.
No.
It's just one of the computers in the cloud, you see?
In the cloud.
And so they showed it as a cloud because you actually – so it's just basically load balanced – computers attached to the internet.
There's no real cloud.
Some of my stuff really isn't hanging up there in the sky.
People actually believe this stuff.
So it turned out before you had the load balancing, you just connect to one computer, and it was really clear. You're just connecting to this computer over there. But now, maybe Google, if you go to their data center, they might have 100,000 computers.
Right.
You don't really know which one you're talking to, and you don't even know which data center you're talking to. So they just symbolize that as a cloud.
So this stuff that you're keeping on the quote-unquote cloud...
It's just on a server.
It's a data center somewhere.
It's just on a data center. It's a data center hooked to the internet. So when Stratford, when we set up our own cloud... We have our own cloud.
And it never rains in that cloud.
No, all we did. It's always sunshiny around our cloud.
Exactly.
And so we just rented rack space at a data center, and we put an array of about 20 computers out there, and we've got our own cloud.
That's beautiful. And so then you go to another data center
and set up another 20 computers, and then in case one data center goes down, you switch to the other one. That's all the cloud
Movable
is.
Movable clouds.
Yeah.
It's basically...
So cloud is a buzzword for data center.
Exactly. Cloud is just a marketing word that actually doesn't communicate anything technical, but it sounds good.
It's sexy.
Nobody's going to question it.
Yeah.
My stuff is still there.
Those commercials on TV where the old ladies are talking and they're going, you know, I look at my wall.
That's a funny commercial, right?
Yeah.
She's got real pictures on the wall.
And then she says, I'm going to unfriend you.
Yeah. And the other one goes, you don't get any of this, do you? I know. It's the cloud. Anyway, interesting stuff, Doc. Before I leave, besides your drone, what was the last piece of technology that you purchased for yourself personally, not for Stratford?
For myself?
Yeah.
Drown.
Well,
can you say it on the air? I just want to make sure.
Oh boy!
Okay, here we go.
We bought a Google Glass.
Really?
What?
Yeah.
Why haven't you brought it in?
Well, I'll bring it in. I've been. You know.
We gotta pull this out of
this
him.
This is breaking news, David Byrne.
Here's what happened.
We're starving for info.
Here's what happened, Dave. I made the mistake of letting the IT department buy the Google Glass. They haven't shared it with, so now they're passing it around.
Passing it around, and
they're all having fun doing it.
I think your listeners deserve the best,
so,
don't you, Doc?
So
here's a funny story, which I'll leave the person who said it anonymous. This is a glass story.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna get the punchline here.
Just make it sure.
Yeah. One of the folks in our tech team. They took glass home, and of course, glass just will record stuff. Yeah. And this glass was recording videos to a common site that everybody on the IT team could see. So they're walking around the house, and they were just flipping their head and turning on the video. They didn't even know it.
Oh, boy.
And they were taking photos of their spouse.
In the bathroom?
Without even knowing it.
Oh.
And then they discovered it.
Oops.
Oops.
Later on. Mm. And they very quickly deleted all those videos.
Good move.
Oh, my God.
The thing with Google Glass is
it's armed at all times.
It's armed at all times, and you just sort of twitch your head, and it starts videoing.
So you have to.
So there is a small privacy issue with it until they get that worked out.
I think so.
So they were recording and not even knowing they were recording.
You know, Doc, here you are talking about the galactic elevator, and you've got Google Glass, your sandbag, and audience. What's that all about?
I think he's waiting for the new semester to start. We're in summer school mode right now.
I get it now.
I'm waiting for the IT department to stop. So, see, the IT department, they're trying to figure out if we can use Google Glass in the classroom.
Oh.
So one of the ideas was we'll have chefs that are in the class, preparing things. If they're wearing Google Glass, they could just record the whole thing.
Well, there was too much cumin on that chicken.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We're actually trying to do something useful with this.
Right.
And so they're trying to figure out how they can integrate it into the classroom. But
a little tempura batter due to the
Google Glass. But here's the thing. The IT department is to stop playing with it, and then I'll get my turn.
Okay, when do you think the arrival of those glasses will show up?
2015.
You want to throw it out? I'd say it's going to be within a month.
I'll give you warning when I want to bust in the show when that happens.
Okay, we'll do that.
For everybody to compile their unbeknownst to them videos.
Exactly.
And then he gets the glasses.
Beautifully done, Jimbo. Beautiful.
Yeah, that's
I have to leave now.
Okay.
Dave, thank you so much.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, Doc.
Bye-bye.
Dave, thanks for stopping in. This is Tech Talk Radio. You're listening to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. We will be back with more right after this on Tech Talk.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to talk about Garrett M. Camp. Garrett M. Camp, he was co-founder of StumbleUpon, a web discovery platform, and Uber, an on-demand car platform. Garrett Camp was born October 4th, 1978, in Calgary, Canada. His mother was an artist, and his father was an economist until they changed careers and became a design-build team. He grew up watching them build houses. In 1996, he enrolled at the University of Calgary in electrical engineering. Between his junior and senior years, he had an internship with Nortel Networks in Montreal, where he worked on speech recognition. He returned to finish his bachelor degree and then stayed on there at Calgary to finish his master's degree in software engineering. He studied collaborative systems, evolutionary algorithms, and information retrieval. He co-founded his first company in 2001. He and three partners set up a corporate entity. They knew they wanted to start something. They just didn't know what. So they set up the corporate entity in October of 2001. And then by November 5th, they came up with the name StumbleUpon. And the idea, he wanted to make the web sort of, you know, your browser sort of be your personal window into the web. And so what StumbleUpon does is you put in the things that you're interested in, say like computer programming or say vacationing in Montreal, and it searches the web. And if when you click the StumbleUpon button, it will bring up a website that satisfies that search tool. I used to do, actually, when I wanted to come up with tech talk topics that were like unexpected, I used StumbleUpon many. I used it a lot. I love StumbleUpon. I now use Flipboard instead of StumbleUpon, and it actually pulls up articles for me. But it actually is quite nice if you want to just look stuff up, and it's addictive because you put in things that you like, and then you can click on it, and it's very, very addictive. And then you can save sites that you've discovered and add them to the StumbleUpon directory. So he started that in 2001, and they came up with the name November 5th. They finished the prototype in 2002, and they worked on it part-time because he was in graduate school. They worked on it part-time until 2005, and then he met an angel investor. Okay, that means money.
Right.
He met an angel investor because they just bootstrapped the whole thing out of their dorm room, and actually he met his angel investor through the site. It turned out his angel investor had been using StumbleUpon, and he sent them a message through the StumbleUpon messaging system, and he said, you know, he liked what they'd done, and so they met him for dinner. He introduced them to other angel investors, and they invested in it. But then they decided to move down to San Francisco because that's the heart of all of the startup community. He also, by the way, found his chief scientist on the website. It turned out that somebody was, you know, looking around the website, and they added a particular page to the directory. And then Garrett looked at the person that had added it, and he realized that the guy who added it was somebody that he'd based a chapter of his thesis on. And he had read all of this guy's research. So he contacted him. They started talking. He hired him as his chief scientist.
Wow.
I mean, that was really a happenstance.
Yeah.
The company really took off. And in 2006, after they got the angel financing, they moved to San Francisco to be near the startup action. And before long, they started getting buyout offers. Within a couple of years, they sold to eBay for $75 million.
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad.
No,
four
not
guys
at all.
Started up, you know, in a few years, sell it for $75 million. But he didn't like the fact that he lost control of it. So 2 years later, he assembled a few investors, and they bought it back. Isn't that something?
That's pretty
really
amazing.
quite, you know, you don't hear that.
No.
So they bought it back, and he was CEO. He became CEO of the company when they bought it back. He ended up growing the company to over 100 employees with 25 million registered users.
Wow.
And he was the founding CEO before he stepped down as CEO in mid-2012.
Hmm.
Now, in 2009, he founded Uber. Now, Uber's an on-demand car service that's available via the mobile application. See, he was just fed up with the taxi problem in San Francisco. If you try to get a taxi in San Francisco, you could be on a street and just be stranded.
Yeah.
It's a real problem. And he said he wanted to solve this taxi problem in San Francisco. That was his... That was the deal. And he and his co-founder of Uber, they were actually at a conference in Paris when they were coming up with this. They were sitting at the bar drinking beer one night. He was complaining about taxis in San Francisco. And the idea of sort of the genesis of Uber came out of that conversation there. And Uber turns out to be a very nice. It started out, by the way, he initially called it Uber Cab,
mm-hmm.
Uber Cab. But then he broadened it because he didn't really. It's really not a cab. It's, you know, it's a car.
Right.
And so that he changed it then to Uber, and now he served as and he did this while he was still CEO of StumbleUpon. And he self-funded the initial seed round for Uber with his own $250,000. Now, Uber launched in San Francisco in mid 2010 with just a few cars on the road, and by the end of 2010, they'd raised $1.25 million in angel financing. Now, how this Uber works? I've got Uber on my phone.
Me too.
It's really great. So
yeah.
you have Uber. It's an Uber application, and when you register for Uber, you have to put in your credit card because you pay for the car up front. So what you do is if you open up Uber and you can look at a map and it shows you all the potential Uber
yep.
vehicles in the area, and they've got the Uber black sedans. That's their traditional Uber car, and these are
high end.
And then they've got the Uber SUVs, and then they've got Uber X or X.
Oh, right. Uber X is
Uber X is sort of like Toyotas and, you know, smaller cars that aren't that fancy, but it's kind of a low end. If you don't want to pay that much, mm-hmm. you get the Uber X, but it's like your neighbor just using the family car to pick you up.
The
it's
Uber sedan thing, I think they have. I know in Baltimore there's a minimum $25 charge for
yeah.
that. But if you go with the other thing, but see, they have standards with the cars. It's not somebody picking you up in a piece of junk. I mean, Uber goes through, make sure they have the insurance. Make sure that you've got a proper car to do this in,
mm-hmm.
and they've
so
got
they,
the drivers.
They actually inspect it, and then what you can do is the other thing is the pricing on Uber. Is dynamically adjusted based on demand.
Mm-hmm,
so if
mm-hmm.
you try to get an Uber car, say, New Year's Eve, it may be more expensive than it
right.
would be at 4 a.m. in the morning on February 10th.
Exactly.
So it's dynamically priced, and Uber will tell you. They say if you wait 15 minutes, it's going to be cheaper. And so they'll give you some feedback on that. So I've used Uber. We went to a wedding in New York City, and you know it was really convenient. We just call the Uber. We're in the hotel. We call Uber. The guy calls us up. He says I'll be in front of the hotel in 5 minutes. We walk down, and there's the Uber car. We don't have to try to fight for a cab
a taxi,
because
yeah.
there are certain times, certain places in New York City, you just can't get a cab.
Nope. You're right,
and we, you know, I used it. I was out at a conference, and I was out in Chicago, and I used Uber. So it's really it bills it for you up front. It adds on the tip. You just get in the car and go.
Now when you sign up for your car, they actually send you the driver's name, a picture of the driver, and the type of car you're going to. So you're not getting scammed.
Right.
Now, the governments don't like this, and taxi cab companies hate this because, you know, on an equal – when everything's equal, an Uber ride costs less than a taxi ride because Uber's not regulated by the government.
That's right.
They're kind of using like the Aereo
mm-hmm.
They're saying we're not a taxi company. We're an app.
So what they
right?
– but you see, this is actually a market disruption. The mm-hmm. problem with the taxi – companies is that the rates are fixed. The rates are fixed. So even if nobody's riding the taxis where they should, they just be able to get anything, the rates don't come down.
No.
But with Uber, the rates are dynamically adjusted. And so it's like supply and demand. It is the way prices should be fixed. So I can think that when government gets involved, it basically distorts the market. And so Uber has taken out the market distortion created by the government. Now the cab drivers are teed off because they have to get a license and all. So what Uber has done, I checked the driver is in New York. They all have to get commercial driver's licenses.
Right.
In the beginning, Uber was not having them get a commercial driver's license, just a regular driver's license,
mm-hmm.
and they made a concession to the government regulators. They said, okay, we will get commercial driver's license, and that was okay. And so I think it's a great service. It is actually going to disrupt the whole taxi business.
And maybe make it better, because I think universally people complain about taxi cabs, right?
Now what Uber has done that's very clever, they're now adding a new service, Uber taxi.
Uh-huh.
And taxis that would like to be part of the Uber suite are now allowed to be there.
Interesting.
And so then you'll just have the Uber pricing, but you'll be using a taxi. So
this
will
continue to blur the lines now, right?
That will completely blur the lines, but I think that's fair.
Yeah. No.
That's fair. So
I got into a fight with somebody about this, and they said, well, Uber can't possibly be any good because the government's not regulating it, so how could it possibly be safe? I said, wait a minute.
It is.
Are you kidding me? Look at how well the taxi cab system runs.
And these drivers are articulate. Uber was in the Forbes top 10 companies in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
It was ranked number 6 in the Fast Company's most innovative companies in 2013. Now, in 2013, Garrett formed Expa. Expa is a startup studio that works with founders to develop and launch new products. In March 2014, Expa raised $50 million. And this is because he said, I've started two companies, and I know how the founders deal with investors. So Expa is designed to help founders really accelerate their growth. Garrett was named to the TR35 of top innovators. These are under age 35 by Technology Review. By the Emerging Technologies Conference at MIT in 2007. So he's a serial entrepreneur, very innovative, and creating some very disruptive companies.
Indeed he is, and we hope you're paying attention because your knowledge could win you a fabulous prize coming up in the pop quiz here on Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. We will be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University Innovative Approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome to the Classroom of the Airways. And, of course, if there is a classroom going on these airways, we're going to have to do an assessment. That would be a pop quiz. To get the right answer to the pop quiz, you get two tickets to Fine Dine to the Escoffier Dining Room, the Karam Dining Room. And you'll also receive an A-plus for this particular class. Earlier in the show, I was talking about Garrett M. Camp, and he started two companies. One was StumbleUpon, and one was Uber. Now, the Uber, of course, was the on-demand car platform. He was frustrated with the fact that he'd never get a taxi cab, and that prompted him to form Uber. What city prompted him to start Uber?
Okay, now if you have the answer to that question, you need to call us right now. If you're calling from west of Calgary, Alberta, Canada, it's 877-936-9333. If you're calling from east of Montreal, which is, of course, a province of Quebec, it's 877-936-9333. And, of course, the wild card line for everybody else is 877-936-9333. Or
if you're calling from Karachi, Pakistan, you can simply use Skype. contact us at TechTalkRadio1, and that will be forwarded directly to the studio. And by the way, the call will be fully encrypted.
Or 877-936-9333.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
That will not be encrypted.
No, it won't.
Okay. So let's talk about the Chrome browser draining PC batteries.
Oh, yeah,
This is quite a story. A documented bug in the source code for the Chromium open source project seems to account for the mysterious power drain that some users of the Google web browsers have been experiencing. The bug was first filed for Chrome version 22 back in September of 2012, yet Google, surprisingly, has ignored it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now this is what happens. When a computer isn't doing much, the CPU sends a signal, sends its CPU a signal to sleep and, you know, to save power. And then it wakes up the CPU every once in a while to check to see if anything's going on. Now, on Windows, these checks normally happen every 15 milliseconds. So every 15 milliseconds, the CPU wakes up, checks around, nothing going on, and then it goes back to sleep again. But Chrome, instead of waking up the processor every 15.625 milliseconds, it tells Windows to wake it up every 1 millisecond. So while your PC would normally wake up the processor 64 times a second, which is not, you know, that's pretty fast, but it's still saving power, when you have Chrome running, it wakes up the processor 1,000 times a second. That's a lot of wake time. And since there's only one platform timer, once the Chrome browser sets it to 1,000 times a second, it just stays there even though you close down Chrome.
Mm-hmm.
So that basically mitigates any power management techniques that you'll have, and your battery will run down much faster. Now, this complaint's been repeated by Chrome users over the years that whenever they use Chrome, they're in Windows, their battery dies quickly. But Google never assigned anybody to fix it. This week, this is the news, Google has assigned an official owner to the bug within Google. So now somebody within Google is assigned to fix this bug, and hopefully it will be taken care of. So if you use Chrome on Windows, be looking out for that Chrome release, because that's going to help you solve the problem. Now, the good news for Linux users and OS X users, you know, Macintosh users or iMac users, this is not an issue for you. It only affected the Windows machines.
Okay. We're going to go quickly to the phones. Let us go to Karen, who is going to be on line 2, and she is calling from Hyattsville, Maryland. Good morning, Karen. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you?
Good, thanks. Doc,
yes.
I didn't ask a question.
Earlier in the show, we were talking about Garrett Camp. Of course, he started, stumbled upon an Uber. What city did he have trouble getting a cab in that prompted him to start Uber?
San Francisco.
That is correct. Correct. You win two tickets to Fine Dining, the Escoffier Dining Room. Stay on the line and talk to Andrew.
Andrew, we'll take care of you. Karen, thanks a lot for calling and stand right by. Doc, I don't know. I'm looking at the clock. I think if we take a break here, it's going to shortchange
you. Let's just keep on trucking. Chinese hackers have taken command of a Tesla Model S. The first documented successful attack of a Tesla Model S came from, guess where? China. China, of course. The Chinese security giant Qihu 360 Security Technology announced this on Thursday. Qihu, have you ever heard of them?
Qihu, I've never heard of them, no.
360. The hackers were attempting to win a $10,000 prize at the kickoff event during the SciScan Plus 360 Security Conference. They were able to gain remote control of the door's locks, of its headlights, of its wipers, its sunroof, and its horn. So they could take over the unit and they could just open the sunroof.
Wow.
In the rain.
Wow.
Which could be a problem.
Could be.
That could be a problem. Now, the security firm declined to reveal the details of the hack or how the hack was accomplished, although one report indicated that they had cracked the 6-digit code for the Model S's mobile app. Qihu 360 said it has reported the hack to Tesla and offered to work with the automaker to fix the vulnerability. I like these kind of contests because it's the first time people have hacked Tesla, but I don't think that many people have tried to do it. Well, the innovation rankings are in. Each okay. year, the global we have the Global Innovation Index. You track that very often?
No,
Jim?
Not
the
really.
Global,
you don't I don't really do know. That? I'll let you do that for me.
Here's the deal. For the fourth straight year, Switzerland has been on the top.
Really?
Who would have thought Switzerland would be at the top of the innovation index?
Beats me.
You know, and sub-Saharan Africa posted significant regional improvement. The annual rankings this year focused on the role people play in the innovation process, and it found that Switzerland and other top-ranked countries, including Britain, Sweden, and Finland, all had strong all-around support that led to high levels of creativity. BRIC nations such as China, Brazil, and India are catching up with the developed countries. Sub-Saharan African region also moved up in the rankings, with the Ivory Coast recording the biggest jump in the, of all the 143 economies surveyed. Sub-Saharan Africa was a more innovative learning. They had more innovative learner economies. And the five African economies that looked the most innovative were Burkina Faso. I don't know where that is. Have you
me.
Heard of that?
Let's find
Gambia,
out.
Malawi, Mozambique, and Rwanda. They also found that R&D funding was slowing down as governments cut back spending, but that this was not expected to slow down the R&D investments in China, South Korea, and India. Now, you might be asking, where did the U.S. rank in this?
Where did the U.S. rank in this?
We were number six. I
wow.
think this does not bode well for the U.S. being, you know, dropping down in the rankings there.
Burkina Faso is north of Ghana.
Okay.
I just thought I'd throw that in.
Well,
there.
Thank you. So,
I'm here to help.
Okay, the supermoon.
Mm-hmm.
On July 12, 2014, many people noticed that the moon looked big and bright. That's known as the supermoon. Now, that's when the moon comes closest to the Earth. You see, the moon's orbit is not actually circular.
Right.
It's elliptical.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever it's at the closest, so when it varies between 357,000 kilometers and 406,000 kilometers, so when it's at the closest point, which is known as the perigee, it appears 14% larger and 30% brighter than it is at the apogee, which is at the farthest point. And so it also we also get a slight increase in the tides. Now, I bring this up, this supermoon, because an interesting thing we're going to – and then you get a supermoon when that apogee point coincides with a full moon. You
right.
see, you have to have a full moon at the same moment you actually have it reach the closest point. And it's going to happen 3 months in a row. This is very unusual.
Interesting.
So it happened in July, but it also happened in June. And I just want to warn our audience, it's going to happen August 10th. And it's going to pass, it's going to be closest at 7 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time on August 10th. And so you'll get to see another supermoon then.
Well, you know, will we have to do like special things like tying down the lawn furniture and things like that?
No, I don't think you're not going to have to do anything like that. But I would, you know, I wouldn't be walking around where you might see any werewolves or anything. Maybe it could bring out the werewolves if you have a big supermoon.
So does it take the moon a month to travel around the Earth? Is that the deal here?
No, I don't think so. It doesn't take a month. It takes the you go from full moon to full moon takes a month.
Mm-hmm.
You see, because that's got to do with the sun.
So
and
the
everything.
Orbit takes less than that.
Yeah, the orbit
okay.
takes less.
I've
than
opened
that.
A
yeah.
can of worms.
You really did.
I'm sorry.
You really did. That's very 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 complicated.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we actually enjoyed the show. It just went by so fast.
It did.
Now listen, we love your email, so email us at techtalk@stratford.edu, and we'll talk to you directly on the show. We'll send you an email. I missed Mary's email. I'm going to email her directly after the show, just to give you some warning here. And check out the programs at Stratford University by going to stratford.edu and tell them that you heard about the programs on Tech Talk Radio.
Thank you for listening. If you missed any of the show or would like to listen again, you can tune in at 2:00 for a replay of Tech Talk. Be back next week.
The views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com, the only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We have baseball on your radio later on today. The Nats host the Brewers. The pregame coverage starts at 6:30 this evening and first pitch at 7 o'clock. It's going to be mostly cloudy but pleasant today in the nation's capital. Right now outside, cloudy 76, 10 AM.
Press conference.